Welcome, first-time listeners and returners to the Sports Deli. The Sports Deli is sponsored by SportRx. SportRx is the leader in sports prescription eyewear. You can find them online at sportrx.com. And don't forget to enter the code DELI10 at checkout for your special 10% discount. A little bit about your host today, Hootie Hoot. I coached college basketball for 23 years, 15 on the men's side and 8 on the women. And I now coach at a low-income, first-generation high school girls basketball here in San Diego. I played 4 years of college basketball. I'm a life coach. I have a beautiful daughter. I'm a professional basketball skills trainer. We love to share space with our guests here in the Sports Deli to talk about the intersection between race and sports, mental health and sports, equality, empowerment, empathy, leadership, education, sports, and solutions. We want to help mobilize, listen, learn, and pay it forward. You can always send us an email to thesportsdeli@gmail.com, and you can also DM us on Instagram at Mike Hootner or on Twitter at Michael Hootner. We're so honored that you're joining us today, and we hope that you can grab your favorite deli sandwich or bagel and your favorite beverage, and let's do this together in the Sports Deli. We are excited to chop it up today on this 26th day of April, National Month of Hope and Alcohol Awareness, and 5 days away from National Asparagus and Barbecue Month, with a legend from Northern California, specifically Oakland, former St. Joe's, Notre Dame High, and UCLA sensation, as his boy Jelani McCoy calls him, who was on the show last week, Ray Yizzle. Ray Young, whose high school also produced Hall of Famer Jason Kidd, and whose incredible story of divine intervention and destiny you don't want to miss. He was a McDonald's, Parade, Basketball Times, and Slam All-American, and he coincidentally wrote a column for Slam magazine during his senior year in high school. He originally thought he was going to play baseball, as he won a Babe Ruth World Series championship at age 12 along with Jimmy Rollins's brother. And as a sidebar, if you have not watched Race and Sports in America from 2020, starring Jimmy Rollins, along with Charles Barkley, Steph Curry, Ozzie Smith, and others, you should check it out on the Golf Channel. It was truly an incredible discussion. Ray switched middle schools after begging his parents, where he later met the Glove and Gary Payton's dad, which turned out to be one of the most impactful things to happen to Ray. But the second most influential thing that happened in middle school was that Ray went to see Jelani McCoy, his now business partner, and others like Paul Pierce, KG, and some other amazing players in Las Vegas in an all-star game for 8th and 9th graders. And he had never seen players that good at such a young age play. And when he was at this event, every big name coach was in attendance, and he was just enamored with the atmosphere, and he realized at that moment that he wanted to play basketball. So baseball got the heave-ho. He used to run a lot of hills, did 1,000 calf raises at night, and he and I both wore the same strength shoes that we'll talk about in a little while. Admittedly, he couldn't even dribble or shoot going into high school. He could only dunk. But that soon changed as he was named Gatorade's West Coast Player of the Year and California Player of the Year. In the McDonald's All-American game, he played on the West squad that included Corey Maggette, Richard Jefferson, and Tayshaun Prince. The game also included future UCLA teammates Jerron Rush and Dan Gadzurek. Interestingly, the game was announced by Jay Billis and Bill Raftery, while Dick Vitale,
yeah baby,
gave a big-time motivational speech before the game. The Wizard of Westwood, John Wooden, rest in peace, was also in attendance. He also played in Magic Johnson's Round Ball Classic in Auburn Hills, Michigan at the Palace. He was regarded by many as a senior, as the number one shooting guard in the country. He was in NBA training camps and the D-League. He shares a birthday with Daniel Cormier, Jamal Crawford, Sting, Mr. Rogers, and Spike Lee. While at UCLA, he played in 123 games and had a career best during his senior campaign, averaging 10 points, 4 boards, 2 assists, while shooting 41% from behind the arc. But what makes that so impressive was his junior year, he only shot 21%, which means from his junior to senior year, he shot 20 percentage points higher, an incredible jump from one year to the next. He was co-captain and a Wooden Award winner his senior year. He played with or against Brandon Roy, Gilbert Arenas, Matt Barnes, Rico Hines, Earl Watson, Baron Davis, Andre Iguodala, Luke Walton, and Nate Robinson as a basketball player, not as a boxer. No comment. Music is a huge part of his life, which he'll explain later. And you won't want to miss the rapid fire as we talk a lot about music and rap back when we were both kids. And at 37 years old, Ray had a massive heart attack in 2017 while balling with his friends, and his heart actually stopped and he was given a 5% chance to live after remaining in a 2-day coma. You don't want to miss this story. He has fully recovered and now has a defibrillator to help shock his heart if it stops again. But the months after were scary, and he'll explain why a little bit later. He believes because he was healthy before and his karma allowed him to recover quickly and gain a newfound appreciation for life to be able to live more in the moment. He's the co-founder of Edgemont Way Ventures for the culture that specializes in tech, media, and sports. You can find him on Instagram at Ray H. Young, the number 3, Ray H. Young 3, or as the co-founder and vice president of Media 34 at Media 34, all spelled out, where they film the most exclusive content in the culture. Also want to give a huge shout out to Crystal Robinson and her new book, Finding Myself, which drops today. She was a guest on our show and was arrested in the middle of our podcast and jailed for a night for literally nothing but racial profiling, whose story of inspiration you do not want to miss. She's a former WNBA player and coach, and you can find the book on Amazon.com in paperback, hardcover, or you can download it for your Kindle. Can't thank you enough for taking time out of your day and joining us here and getting that Sports Deli karma. UCLA, baby. Let's go. Ray Yizzle.
What's going on?
What's up, dog?
Man, everything. How you doing?
You guys filming today?
No, not today. I'm chilling today. I just got finished with Bikram Yoga.
Oh, nice.
Got some more editing and some other podcast stuff, but we're not filming, just editing today.
I've been teaching yoga for a while.
Oh, really? Well, which kind?
You know, I usually do restorative.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I'm a big Bikram Yoga 26-2 fan. You know, I want the, you know, sweat me out.
Yeah,
you know,
hell yeah.
Tire me all the way out. You know, get every toxin. You know, I want all the tingling sensation, the head rush. So that's why I actually fell in love with.
That's solid. Were you in that space before? We'll talk about it later, but before your heart attack, or is that just something? Mm-hmm.
No, I was always in the space probably from early 30s on, but the closer I got to 35, I mean, I was, you know, I still do it probably 3 times a week at least.
Wow, that's cool. You got to get Jelani up in there.
Yeah, I know. They run from it. You know, Bikram's not a joke. You know, that he sits on you different. So, it, you know, yeah, they run from
it. Well, Lon probably has a tough time sitting still too, and just being present in that moment.
Yeah, exactly. And that was probably the hardest part for me.
For sure. Man, I really appreciate you and Lon and KJ and Lav and the UCLA, you know, brotherhood for trusting us with this space and taking time out of your busy schedule, bro.
Nah, I'm glad to be here to rap with you.
So I want to talk about the strength shoes, because as I told Lon, I don't know if you saw the teaser, but So I wasn't paying $100 for them bad boys, but I certainly cut up a pair of shoes and cut the bottoms and stacked them on the toe. And hey, I don't know about you, but those shits worked for me. I gained 8 inches that I was grabbing the rim.
Yeah. So that's what I tell people was, not only did the strength shoes work, if you actually did the program, you're going to get inches.
Man,
you know, that was the key. If you did the program, it was going to work. I also I took it to another level. So in junior high at Montera, I would just wear them all day. I'd wear them all day. When I trained, I lived on the hill. We had moved to a hill when I was like another hill when I was 13. So I would just put those on, run up the hill about a mile and a half up. So I used them and it worked for me because I was just I was average athletic. I had to work for it. So
yeah, for sure. So love the over your right shoulder. It says do epic shit. Love that.
Yes, sir.
That's what I'm talking about. What's over your left shoulder? Tell about what, for those just listening, not watching, over your left shoulder, the painting on the wall.
Oh man, it's the epic MC Nasir Jones.
Yeah.
AKA Nas.
Yep.
It's actually perfect timing because he had one of my best album, or to me, one of his best albums over the pandemic. King's Disease. Yep. So, shout out to Nas. And more importantly, I don't give a shit what Nas is, rapped about. I now want to figure out how Nas is getting into all these deals. I mean, I know how he's getting into them, but I want to participate in those conversations. he can have all the rap he wants to. I want to know the tech.
Yeah, so those are the spaces that have not been afforded to the Black and Brown community, the way that you and Baron and everybody from Slick and Media 34 are trying to tap into. And we've talked about it in the past that white producers and directors of these big, large conglomerates have even resisted producing and directing and making films because it means that they're changing the narrative, even though they can make more money. They would hold off on it, which is crazy. It's counterintuitive, but that's the manipulation.
Yeah, it's just it's like everything else. You just gotta own your own. I'm one of those people like, hey, I just want to mind my business. I know my lane, so I'm not even trying to be in everybody's lane. And I think as a culture, we've been so used to like giving it away, or taking such a low sum of immediate money, not thinking about the back end, because most Black and Brown communities don't have the wealth of resources to be thinking about, a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years down the line. So if they can get an immediate, something now, they'll take it. And a lot of times that also hurts the culture, but also I'm empathetic because I know, hey, they're probably in the situation where like, hey,
I gotta get mine.
They needed it.
Yeah.
And they couldn't wait or think long term. They're just not in that financial position. Which is the narrative and also things that we're putting in place so we can change that.
So collaborating is changing, or is it just changing because of your experience at UCLA?
I think collaborating is changing, and I'll tell you why. What you're starting to see, in my opinion, is a lot of the unveiling, right, of what's happening in the media, what's happening in policing, what's happening in with male chauvinistic pigs in Hollywood and elsewhere doing asshole, can I cuss? I'm sorry.
It's all good, bro. We're good.
Okay. Yep. So I think this is the time where you kind of gotta rebuild. Gotta rebuild the thinking. And I think as a culture, meaning I'm part of the sports culture, I'm part of obviously the Black and person of color culture, right? Like I could never take that off. And I think collaborating is changing because one, we know our power and it's like, hey, You know, my dad always said, like, hey, you got to have friends on the other side of the fence, right? And I think that a lot of those big conglomerate companies are starting to see the power in the quote unquote little man and the media 34s and the people who are nice and nimble are still getting great stories that are almost Tyler Perry niche to their audience, right? I always tell people there's no white dude alive that could ever tell the story the way I need to receive it.
Yeah.
Just because I have a day-to-day lens that is just far different than yours, right? So I may emphasize one thing and you may emphasize another thing, and they're both great. Come on, the digital space has enough room for everybody, right? But I also just think that, hey, we have—
But you're not appealing to the white person necessarily.
That's not really. Like, right. Like, you know, that's why—
Who cares?
Tyler Perry, well, this is what I'll say. Because this is what why I love being a part of the sports culture and community. Everybody's a part of that. That's my one way that I can say, hey, you know, sorry, you know, I did grow up in East Oakland. This is how I feel. These things have happened. You know, this is my life experience. But sports, come on, not to say that it's equal. I'm just saying that it's more fair than the rest of society to where, hey, I don't give a shit what color you are. You know why? If you're going to help me win this ball game tonight,
yeah,
we're bros. What do you mean? We go through the same, you know what I mean? So that's why I say that there's enough space for everybody. I'm just simply saying, hey, there's a lot of my content where I'm not even, that's not my narrative. I'm not trying to appeal to them because I don't have that experience too. So it's like, hey, I know my lane. Let me appeal to the people that want to listen and understand my lifestyle and understand my interests and why you would see Nas and things that represent, you know, what is true to me. That's all.
So to add layers to what Spike Lee has done, you know, the Fridays, you know, and so are you trying to educate or entertain?
Both. Edutainment, KRS-One.
KRS-One, yeah.
Hey, you know, I thought that was one of the dopest album titles. Yeah. And hey, I'm not a preacher. I'm not I am, you know, my spiritual in my own right, but I try to give as much as the quote unquote truth that I have either witnessed or heard stories of, or people close to me have given. So I just kind of try to stay true to what I know, because I know, though this is a niche market now, in 15, 20 years, this is going to be what it is, right? Because I mean, hell, everybody talks about, you know, in the next 20 years, you're not going to know what color anybody is. It will literally be life experiences that will connect you. And I love staying in having that niche in sports also, because I feel like that's where we can kind of bring it all together. You know what I mean? A lot of the other stuff is more lifestyle and, you know, I'm a sneakerhead. So even the sneaker culture, yeah, which I love. That's also a universal, you know, I can go to Japan right now and they get it. You know, I can go to the UK right now. They get it, right? So yeah. I try to do not a balance, because I'm not cognizant of, hey, I'm trying to get everybody's attention. But I am cognizant of, hey, along with the things that I would say, like, are specifically Black and brown POC, you know, content for people of color that have had different shared experiences or stories. I go sports and the sneaker culture now allows me to talk to everybody, right? Because when I go to Sneaker Con in New York or, you know, a pop-up shop, whatever it is, shit, I see everybody. Now, I'm also smart enough to know that though you see everybody, the people who brought the world to sneaker culture was literally Black America. You know, less not get it twisted. Nope. You know, there's no spin, none of that. Kids in Harlem, kids in East Oakland, kids in Miami, kids in these major cities has made these brands like Nike, like, well, I wear a Marathon, but Marathon's an example, right, of all of the things that we, all of the brands that we have went through, instead of, like you said, supporting somebody, quote unquote, like neighborhood NIP, right? Yeah. Yeah. Or whatever your local, you know, dope era in Oakland, my man, Fabby. You know, I mean, half of Oakland wears that. I love that.
Master
but P. Before, right, there were kids, we were wearing Polo. We were wearing Tommy Hilfiger. Yeah. We were wearing LSA. Nike Air Force Ones.
Fila.
Literally $60. Nobody wore those in America until the kids in Harlem, which I knew just from watching movies and like, they wear those funny, you know, Air Force Ones, Nike. And we thought they were weird for a while. Then the next thing you know, you see them. And now half the world is wearing them. And then Nike raises them to $90. People didn't know. Air Force Ones were throwaways. Those were $60 sneakers, the bottom of the bottom, until we made them fly.
And then they were in a song. Right.
And then Nelly makes the song.
Exactly.
They're out of here. But I go, there was a whole 10 years before the Nelly song. Right. And me, just so you know how I think about it, I'm more interested in the culture that got it to where Nelly was. Because I know there was a whole bunch of stories and, you know, shit that happened until the world. And now you see kids in middle America singing my Air Force Ones. And it's like, yeah, those were from kids in Harlem, right? Those were, quote unquote, D-boy shoes, meaning if you sold drugs and you had the cleanest Air Force Ones on the block, they have no clue. Like, you get what I'm saying? They don't even know, like, how it even got there. So I'm more interested in telling those stories. That's my point.
It's fascinating because, you know, I'm from Detroit, right? So I was integrated in fifth grade. I went from a Jewish day school to the story. So, but it's interesting because I hadn't thought about it in this way, right? Because, you know, we know Spike Lee, we know rap, and that's sort of what you're doing in your space, telling the stories, but it's a way in. It's a way to relate. Not necessarily that is your goal, but people can instantly like say, oh, for real? And so now there's this like a locker room, there's this connection through entertainment or tech that either the white community or the Hispanic community can say, oh, damn, now there's a connection. And so that breaks down the walls, that breaks down barriers, instead of having to have all the time the same awkward conversations about you're tired of it. You know, a lot of people are tired of it. And so through music or entertainment, you know, now people are connected and they may not even have realized it, you know, because if you're just doing something and organically, it's now evolving and extrapolating out to, you know, different parts of society, which is, you know, you call it staying in your lane, but I call it fascinating because I hadn't thought of, there's thousands of layers. I got a layer here, our platform, you got a layer. Everyone's doing their layers to try and change the narrative. So I find it fascinating. And you know, what it reminds me of too, Ray, is the NCAA for years, they didn't fucked up. They if they would have given a permission.
Hey, the NCAA is in trouble. And you know why? Because it's what we as athletes already knew,
right?
Said, talked about the locker rooms.
Yeah.
Yo, these are a whole bunch of racist motherfuckers who don't give a fuck about what we got going on and are literally taking all of the money and giving us, you know, an iPad for the, you know, Pac-12 tournament or,
bullshit.
You know what I mean? You know, extra per diem, the further you go in the tournament or, and I go like, yo, there's literally people from all over the world that come to these games to see us.
Yeah.
Nobody even knows who the hell the NCAA really is. And we're like, nobody gives a damn. You guys were organizers. You guys should get paid an organization fee, right? Some should go back to the school cost. The rest should go back to the kids.
But see, this, yeah, you're right. This is
obvious.
It's ridiculous. Like, but yeah, this is my point now. So this is why we are where we are, is because the NCAA, if they had done what they should have done 20 years ago when
Ed O'Bannon.
Ed O'Bannon was speaking out on this stuff, and they would have, you know, come correct. Now it's going to get flipped on its ugly ass head. And so it's the same thing with what you're doing, is because the white industry, they didn't fucked up also, because if they had been more welcoming and collaborative, then, but I'm glad that they didn't, because now we got these new spaces, and the black dollar is obviously very important to you, and not just the UCLA Brotherhood, but just people in general. You know, like I said, Master P is making freaking ice cream, endorsing all these things, you know, and, you know, these people would never have had these opportunities if the people that came before them, like Spike, and obviously sports people, Colin and Kareem, and
there's a lot of people that don't get talked about. And one, I want to acknowledge and just say this out loud. Hey, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you know, and Mike is, you know, baby goat. You know, Kareem's my goat, you know, just in terms of like
everything,
human being,
yeah,
epic shit in the 60s, you know, in the thick of it. You know, he's 7 foot, he's well spoken, he went to UCLA. He never lost, I think he might have lost one high school game, didn't lose a college game, 6 rings, scores the ball off of a shot that is so hard, nobody even wants to shoot it anymore.
Crazy.
You know, I just go like, that to me, that's goat shit. But I go, you don't hear about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar even getting promoted the way he does. I will say the big man bias. I will say that, because I do understand the game. But also, his name is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. If it was Luau Cinder, you guys would all know and be like, oh, I didn't know. Oh, Mike is cool, but let's talk about, if you're an actual basketball player, whose body do you want to be in?
Right.
That nobody won more than Kareem Abdul-Jabbar from top to bottom, you know, in life. So that's what I'm saying. Like, hey, you don't know why you don't hear more about Kareem, the number one scorer ever, right? Who's still alive, right? His name is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. If it was Luau Cinder, I promise you, he'd be on TV right now today, period.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. We want to give props to PSK Collective. Be inspired in PSK, where their clothing promotes inclusivity, empowerment, and equality by supporting female athletes through the Women's Sports Foundation. You can find them online at pskcollective.com or at walmart.com. And for Dr. J, I'm Hootie Hoot. And now back to the interview with Ray Young right here in the Sports Deli. Tell everybody a little bit about, I know you've talked about it a lot, but just your experience at UCLA, because it wasn't necessarily everything that you had hoped for. You know, there's a lot of things that you found out after you got there. And because I've asked this question before, and you know, you talked a little bit about, you know, the culture, and I'm gonna talk about music in a minute too, but I've asked Matt Doherty, who was on the show, about the Carolina Brotherhood, you know, and Rashawn McLeod was on, and I've asked him about the Duke Brotherhood. But Lon said some interesting things, just about not staying inside the family. Like, Earl didn't get the job, you know, and that was something that, you know, was upsetting to you guys. And nothing against Mick.
Listen, if Earl wouldn't have gotten the job, I'd have been okay if they would have gave him a fair shot.
Yeah.
I mean, damn. I mean, you see what I'm saying? Whether you like Hubert Davis or not,
you got a fair shot.
Who, you know, I'm not mad. That's the brother. When soon as Coach K is out of there, guarantee you're gonna be looking down one of them people, or somebody may come back.
Yep.
But it's due.
Yeah.
UCLA, for whatever reason, you know, you gotta think about it. UCLA is still the school that fired the head coach over like a dinner violation the year after they won the national championship. See, these are the things nobody wants to talk about. That's why UCLA is taking 30-something years to get back to a consistent, oh, I actually want to go to UCLA. Well, you dumbasses fired a coach over some bullshit violation. That's how Lab got the job, right? So I was like, well, you can't do shit like that. like, hey, I don't give a damn what he did. Do you understand? There's no place in the country that would have ever,
dumb shit.
I remember being in high school, like, what? Like, huh? Like, get out of here. Until you find out how the real UCLA sports politics works and the families and Guerrero hating that this coach has so much, you know, power at the school, or till you start getting all of this and that, you just look at it and go like, oh, they don't really have nobody's back. It's just, you're supposed to, you know, thank the ground that you got into UCLA or you're part of this thing. You know, and they'll tell you all this bullshit about Jackie Robinson and Lou and all this shit, but it's also, in my opinion, racist, classist, all kind of shit. So I felt like Herrick felt it from the underbelly of UCLA. And I just go like, hey, that's why we're happy. You know, thank God we now have a Black athletic director. I'm not going to say this is because of him or any of that. I'm not saying that. But I am saying, you can please believe the culture at UCLA after 30-something years has changed, right? Because I go, they never answered for 96. Like, there was, I never heard, like, a legit answer of, like, what the fuck were you guys thinking, right? Like, I never heard a legit answer.
Mind-blowing.
So, for them to finally, 30 years later, go, cool, hey, we're going to give this Black guy a shot. All right, cool. I go, so that, hey, as of right now, that's where my UCLA energy is. It's like, hey, look, they got a Black dude in there. They're winning. I expect the culture to change. I expect kids to want to go to UCLA again. And your barometer is if LA kids are staying home to go to UCLA. You can literally win a national championship in LA. You don't need to recruit. You don't need, you know, you may need some ones or twos a few places, but you could pretty much stay in LA and win. And if your kids in LA aren't even looking at you, you're basically a bum program, in my opinion.
There's not many states like that, like Michigan. You know, I'm from Detroit, obviously. Michigan State. You ain't got to go nowhere.
You don't have to go anywhere. You
have to go anywhere.
Like anywhere. Come on, the kids are here. Create an environment. Juwan Howard, I'm impressed. And I just go like, hey, this is because we've put pressure to give not only Black coaches a shot, but especially ex-players. All this money they made for your, the Fab Five still makes money for Michigan. Are you kidding me? Like, that's the shit that I'm talking about in terms of like, hey, dude, do y'all understand? All the Black kids across the country wore Black Nike socks because of these dudes. There was not a white guy, a Jew, there was no Latino brother. It was some brothers from Michigan that were wearing Black church socks with the all Black high tops. And it was like, ooh, you know, like, ooh.
Real talk, yep.
Dude, I started taking my dad's church socks. We got into a thing. You know, hey, we got to get you your own socks, bro. You're wearing out my, you know what I mean? But I go like, that's all fine. Imagine if they got a check. What, like, how these brothers couldn't get a check for the legacy they left at Michigan. So if they wouldn't have gave Juwan Howard the job,
man,
whoo, that would have been tough. You know, but Michigan did the right thing. Their culture is up. UCLA culture is up. Black athletic director. I just go like, I don't know what people are thinking, but you know, the days of where people are just gonna you know, walk into UCLA or whatever just because you're, you know, some quote unquote good school, this shit is over. People have too much information and also seen how badly, you know, their uncles or aunts or whatever got treated as college athletes. And they're like, nah, you know, I respected the Pac-12 athletes for not competing during COVID. Like straight up, like, no, you're not about to get us killed, get all the bag, you know, we might play, we might like, no. Hey, we'll see you later. The kids that are already getting drafted knew they were, you know.
Especially back then, because we didn't know as much back then, for sure.
I don't think we knew. I was like, nah, I knew. I was very, very, very much aware, especially at UCLA, because it's like, you got to remember, this is the first time I'm taking like African American studies. I'm studying now the history of Los Angeles, the history of California. And you're seeing all of these parallels of free labor.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, what are we talking about? If you can convince somebody of free labor, of course you can build a society or anywhere faster and better. Like, off of some bullshit. So in my brain, I'm like, I still may eat Top Ramen or McDonald's, but I'm literally on TV like 3 times a week and my highlights and, you know, that one dunk and like, damn, you know, I'm like, it's full for the clout. But, you know, when you're in college and you're eating that one Top Ramen, and I don't know if everybody has that, but, you know, that one Top Ramen and you're sitting and you can't call home, you know, because you already, you know, begged them for some money and they ain't got no more. So, yeah, you start having, or I did, you know, let me speak for myself. I did. I was smart enough to like, hey, this, I mean, shit, I shouldn't be living a quote unquote regular student life. Like, I'm technically affording half of these motherfuckers' lifestyle. Like, right? Like, totally. You know, like, dude, we're UCLA basketball, when I came, dude, it was Lakers, UCLA basketball, right? SC football, Clippers.
But nobody was doing well back then, really. It was really your show when you guys were winning the national title. Like, all those other sports teams were in a down period.
In the 90s, UCLA was consistent and always had pros, right? Because there was a whole bunch of LA kids that could just stay here, go down the street and do their thing, right? But I just go like, that completely fell off once you start getting to the ego of, you know, this coach has too much power, like, you know, whatever. But that's why I just say, like, hey, you can't get away with the same old school narratives anymore.
Nah.
I was aware of what was going on, but I understand a lot of people weren't, you know, they until probably Ed O'Bannon and Sonny Vaccaro and all these other faces that you heard early in the day, but I knew exactly what they were talking about from experience, from Cup of Noodles and McDonald's. You know what I mean? I knew, this doesn't quite seem right. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and then, I'll tell you the other thing that threw me. Oh, when you see your jersey in the, dude, you're like
$50 per jersey and I'm not getting a cut.
You're like,
what the
fuck? I just had some McDonald's last night and damn, that 34 shows up, you know, or what, you know, you're just like. So I go like, how ridiculous is that? I go like, eventually we're going to get to the point where we're going to look at the NCAA for what it was a slave ship, guys. They dressed it up and they made it cool for us. It was a slave ship. They allowed these schools to sell our jerseys, sell our likeness, do all of this shit with no answer to a financial check, which is disgraceful because literally we're practicing 6 to 8 hours a day, right? Between weights and practice and conditioning and this, that, and the third. We have to be normal students, right? Depending on which school you go to, and I'll tell you this, UCLA, you did have to be a student, right?
Yeah.
You know, I didn't go to the school where you can kind of, you know, do your thing. No, you actually, you know, had to do it. So how aren't we benefiting off of this? And then, you know, I know what TV, I mean, you know, Google was available when I was there. I know what these TV rights are. I'm like, damn, like, not like that. Y'all can keep the free education. Like, like, seriously, keep it. Like, bro, nobody's, no McDonald's All-American is going to college worrying about if he's getting a degree or not. It's not. Not me. I wasn't. Yo, I got a degree, thank God, but that just was because I happened to be there long enough to get one, right? But you're not thinking you're going to really get a degree, and who gives a shit? If your life path is basketball, it's the reason you go to college, right? Is to get a good job and sustain it and do it. Basketball players are a little different. We have a quicker life path and access to money at an earlier age, but it's the same game. It's just a job, right? You just work for whatever team. You're getting a paycheck. It's every 2 weeks. I mean, it's very regular, degular. So the fact that, you know, we have to jump through hoops and, you know, do all of this stuff, it's like, yo, keep the education. Why don't you give us the money? A percentage of what you guys are earning. Like, it does not have to be complicated. Like, stop acting like being transparent and running this, like, come on, guys. Like, we've all been in AU programs. We get it. It's like you book a couple of flights, you know, get the arena. Like, yo, there's literally people that do this for a living. You know, they're called tour managers. Like, I mean, we can get our own.
So now everything's going to the Supreme Court now. And so you think things are shifting now that the,
Yes.
So that's the most important thing, right?
Yeah. I think it's shifting. Thank God, just because, like you said, now the masses of people have the same information that we have.
Do you think what Ed was trying to do, there should be some form of reparations for college athletes?
Absolutely. Yeah. There should be a form of reparations in real life. You know, let's in real life, and absolutely through college athletes.
Yeah.
Yo, there's ESPN Classic. I saw, you know, us playing SC. I'm like, damn. I know that cost amount of money to, right? Like, we wouldn't get a percentage of that.
Exactly.
Like, not like nothing. Like, if this was a regular TV show, which it is now, right? Yep. You receive a royalty.
Yep, exactly.
Right? Hey, regular degular. So for whatever reason, it doesn't happen with us. I just go like, hey, another travesty. But I just think like, yo, like, no, there should be reparations all the way, like in real life and for all college athletes, no matter what color you are, right? Because they're at some level, the NCAA pimped us.
Yeah, they did. So anything else about your experience there? You know, it's interesting because I went to a small D3 school. I had a chance to walk on at Fairleigh Dickinson, but I played on the first team in the history of the school that I went to. And coach and most of the players philosophically did not see eye to eye. And so there's been a lot of damage in the last 30 years. So similarly, UCLA and the athletic, only because the current coach there now is a former player. To our point before, he's trying to repair things. Athletic director doesn't even know who we are. There's not this alumni reach out to say, hey, we're really sorry. We blew it for the past couple of generations, but we want this to be like Duke and Carolina. Like, that's UCLA's got history. You know, Wizard of Westwood, Bill Walton, Kareem. You know, are things repairing?
I think Coach Cronin being there, one, actually it helped that he was an outsider because he's not directly involved with the old politics and just some of the things that being really a part of UCLA, like, you know, that went down, that shouldn't have. So that actually helped because he can just kind of stay neutral and not worry about it. I feel like the biggest thing that they did, they hired a Black athletic director. Yeah. And what does the Black athletic director do immediately? get us the hell out of this Under Armour deal.
Right.
UCLA have been selling their athletes out for 20 years. Yep. Nobody at UCLA ever wanted to wear Reebok.
Yep,
like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Nobody. The only reason you were getting players was literally just because your name was it was UCLA, but like the players weren't even wearing Reeboks. They would just take their shoe up like, nah, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
Then they sold us out again to Adidas.
Yeah.
Damn, nobody want to wear no damn Adidas. We're in LA. We're on TV every week. I need the new J's. Like, what are we doing?
Exactly.
Right? Like literally. Like, these. Yep. I'm a grown man thinking like this, and I still do because I just love sneakers. But
right,
come on, you gotta imagine a 16-year-old. They're not thinking about that shit. Yo, I want to be in the freshest shit out. And remember, most of the college players will never play a game of basketball again. This is their last. This is it.
This is it. Yep.
I want to look fresh. I want to look good. I want to be in Nike. I want to be in Jordan. So that's why I said, like, hey, I'm rolling with dude, because he knew that. Like, we're not getting no brothers in here with Under Armour. What do you think this is?
Yeah. Yep.
Can't recruit. You know what we wear. Get us in that deal.
Yep. For real. You know, I've talked about that for years, and people don't think that's such a big deal. You know, whatever you're wearing.
Huge deal.
Man.
People are thinking like parents instead of like having enough self-awareness to remember how they were at 17 and 18. No, you want to look good. And hell, if I know I'm not going to the NBA, which 95% or 99% of college players aren't,
here.
This is their roster raw to look good and,
yep.
You know, get and get free Jordans and Nikes,
yeah.
Or you know, whatever it is. Like, shit. Yeah. What's hard not to understand about that?
Really? Well, yeah, he's been very transparent. You know, I saw him on KJ Live. You know, Chris did a great job talking to him.
Great job. And shout out to KJ. I love KJ Live.
Yeah, he's doing a good job. I know he's doing some other things too, which is great for him. I want to thank CityLokes.com, where you can get your own personalized hats and phone cases, tees, accessories, and much, much more. I ordered two hats. And they're amazing. One of them says the Sports Deli, and it has a California license plate, and the other one has a Michigan license plate and says Speak Up and Dribble, Black Lives Matter. So check them out at CityLokes.com, and don't forget to enter the code THESPORTSDELI at checkout for your special 10% discount. And for Dr. J, I'm Hootie Hoot, and now back to the interview with Ray Young right here in the Sports Deli. So talk a little bit about after UCLA, you know, what you did and you know, were you in a good place? You know, obviously you worked out a lot and then, you know, a few years ago, something happened that we talked about in the intro, and just talk about how that changed your life. And even the weeks after that happened, you were just like, yo,
Yeah, I'll give you a quick rundown. So after leaving UCLA, I was already a real estate investor. Right. So I actually had money outside of basketball. And what I found out was I had more money than the majority of the D-leaguers and all of the people that I ended up playing with.
Yeah.
So I was still getting NBA tryouts, but I was in a position leaving UCLA where I had a spectacular senior year, but it was like, where had he been before? Right. So it was like, you know, and that's a long story, but point is, that was my basketball story. I stopped when I was like 26 and, or 25, it was either 25 or 26. And I remember saying, I don't want to be the old dude in the D League talking about, I'm still going to the NBA.
Yeah.
Right. I have enough money. I was already driving the Benz. I owned multiple properties. Let's just go into that, right? And I did. You know, now, mind you, 26 is 2006. So, yeah, I've been investing since 2003. So, obviously, the market is still hot, right?
Yep, it was hot. So,
yeah, it's hot. So, hey, yeah, I'm going to just go do this.
Was that your major at UCLA? Were you business?
No. I was actually a history major. Because I couldn't be a business major. And I also knew my intention in life was never, ever to work for anybody, right? Yeah. It was always to be an entrepreneur, independent, you know, or some level of that. So, yes. Real estate 2006, 2009 crash, lose the majority of my net worth and everything. Yeah. So starting over, which is great. Yeah. Don't get it twisted. That was one of the best things in life that happened to me, and which has now prepared me now for having an actual venture fund. Yeah. But losing everything was great in the sense that I now know what I needed. I now know what I did need. And I also figured out like how fucking tough and resilient and like, oh, you know, I can, you know, figure it out. Now the figuring out part, that took a while. I've done everything from having a job to network marketing to growing and selling marijuana to obviously now production and more quote unquote established ventures. But I've always been an entrepreneur, a hustler. I sold on Amazon for years.
Did you collab with Baron? Because he's obviously been investing for a long time. And
yeah, I've never collab with Baron on investing, yeah. But he was one of the, he was the first person that gave me a shot to be in production, a producer, because he knew, one, I have an eye, and I really like study the culture in real life, like,
yeah,
no fake. I just know and not only do I try to know, I'm one of those people like, no, like, oh, I like sneakers. Yeah, I had a sneaker business. I was flipping sneakers for years, literally, like,
that's classic.
Hey, like drugs, like, you know, I knew that's how to go. I would flip them, slinging them, eBay, pop-ups. Wow. I don't play. Like, if I like it, I'm going to get involved in the business side of it so I can learn and have a different
understanding,
knowledge, mm-hmm, than the average individual, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I treated everything that I did. Like, okay, wow, I have an interest in this. Hey, let's turn this. This producing thing is, oh, this is tight. I love this. Hey, Jelani, let's link. Media 34, right? Baron's doing it this way. Hey, I like doing it this way. Why don't we do it this way over here and call it Media 34? Boom. That's how that happened. But that, me getting to Media 34 would not have happened without intersecting with Baron, because long story short, normal day playing basketball, still don't know what happened, and thank God I don't fully know, but blacked out, heart stopped, luckily got saved because one of my best friend's cousin, who was a firefighter, had one of three or four devices that was able to keep me alive long enough just to get to the hospital, to which I went into a coma, spent 3 days in the coma, woke up, it was weird because I couldn't really comprehend.
You're disoriented, first of all.
Yeah, it's hard to explain to somebody what I mean, or just how like fucking scary it is. So it's like, yo, like, imagine. So I don't remember any of it. I don't even remember going to play hoop or any of it.
Wow.
I'm probably about a month before, you know what I mean?
Wow.
And I think like that's just like, hey, the way the universe wanted to work, like, yo, you don't need to know nothing.
That's crazy.
Yeah. They're like, yeah, Matt Barnes will tell you everything because he was there. Wow. So I listen to their stories. Whatever they tell me happened. I don't know. I was out, obviously. So woke up, and you know, you can imagine, you're just going like, yo, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Like, I was literally, and I don't cuss around my parents, or you know, I'm still their son, and you know, I woke up. What the fuck? Whoa, you know, like, hey, it was literally like a movie. So then they had to tell me and what happened, and they said I asked another like 40 or 50 times, and they didn't know it. It's like, yeah, I can't process shit. I'm about to ask you another 80 times because you might have said it, and that shit is, I don't even know where to grab it from. right? Like, yeah, so it, like, I joke about it now, but nah, it was like scary, like crying shit if I really think of it, because it's like, yo, imagine you receiving a whole bunch of information that your brain can't even keep, and then talking is even weird because, one, I don't know really all of what you said, yeah. And then two, I don't have the words or the fortitude to communicate what I think you were trying to say. So everything was very, yeah, that's cool. Or like, okay, you know, or I would just, so now what happened? Okay. And now I forget. I try to remember it, but I forget. So it was like just imagine your brain, the mush, like it was scary. And it was like so shocking that it was like, you don't know if you're gonna retain this again, but you're getting stuff, but it's whoo, man, it's hey, like I said, it's like your brain is, just imagine waking up after 3 days and somebody trying to like bring life back to you and tell you what happened and like.
So do you think, you know, you moved a couple of times when you were a kid, you went Florida, right? And then you came back.
Yeah, just for 2 years.
Yeah, just for a couple of years.
I tell people all the time, Florida was so racist and crazy. we went back to Oakland when it was the murder capital.
Jesus Christ.
My parents were like, nah.
We're good. But I ask you that because, you know, you've had different experiences, right? And music's very important to you, obviously. And you think because of the way that you approach life and you were supported and you were able to understand the grind growing up, not just with sports, but just street life and just the way that the world was, the way that the narrative was, that helped you recover from this heart attack? Because, you know, you just intrinsically understand how to grind.
Yes. This is what I'll say about that, of how I look at what happened to me, right? Or what I subconsciously created, if you want to say that too, you know. But this is how I feel. I feel, one, my body and just the way I work out still continuously to this day, like an athlete, one, my body knew, like something just went wrong for whatever that one specific moment. My body knew to get back in motion, right? That's one thing that I don't know, but I just inherently understood, like, nah, my body ain't about to just do no shit like that, right? And then the second part of it is spiritual, and this, you know, I don't want to get too deep, but, you know, I just go like, nah, karmically, yeah, I'm good, right? Like, nah, like, and not to say that if somebody doesn't come out that karmically they weren't. I'm just saying for me, I mean, you know, I once this happens to you, now you hear other stories, and just I'm just saying for me, I know I'm straight. I know my energy, and you know, when they were dotting the lines and going through the angels, you know, they was like, nah, give him more time down on earth. He's straight, you know. We, you know, that's how I felt. So I felt like me coming back was almost like a sign, a guarantee of like, nah, bro, whatever you wanted out of life, this is, now's the time, we're getting it now. So I will say it changed me in the sense of.
You pay attention more? Are you in the moment more?
I'm in the moment more, but I'm also not as hard on myself. I'm also more present. My give a fuck meter is like very low, unless it's, you know, equal rights or just something, just like some asshole shit. Nothing bothers me too much anymore. It's a different kind of peace. And I just, like I said, I felt like shit. Yeah. Karmically, nah, I'm supposed to be here. I'm straight. And based upon what I had already planned to do in life, somebody signed off on that. So I need to go through that path in life now, right? And that's where the production, Baron gave me opportunity. I was going back and forth to LA to the Bay literally every week. Wow. Flying back and forth 2 years. He offered me a position. I ended up moving down to LA September 2019 for good. I knew I wasn't going to leave again. Yeah. I built my media knowledge and skill and, you know, all around network up, started my own company. That led to my next door neighbor, ironically, he had been creating tech apps for a while, and I wasn't paying attention to them at all.
Wow.
And then he called me about one particular one and was like, yo, I need you to market it, and what you've learned about media, blah, 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 gave me a piece of, or an opportunity to earn a piece of this company that he was a part of. And that was my intro really into tech, though I was around it, though I was with Baron Davis for 2 years, who invested in probably about 25 companies.
Yep.
So I'd seen enough and knew, like, oh yeah, first of all, I'm already doing this.
Right.
You know, let's stay. I've been hooking people up. I've been giving people money. I've been building businesses. I've been intricate pieces of why such and such got this opportunity and why they didn't in real life. I didn't know the white boys called it VC. So once they explained it to me, did my education, did my research. Oh, great. Wait, I could do this legitimately with more money. And I have a group of lawyers that will help me, you know, make these decisions. I was like, oh shit, I can get my, not only my whole network paid, but it's like, now I know everybody who's at the top of their game at whatever level in life and business. I'm like, oh.
So as a venture capitalist, did you get some pushback?
Nah, hell no. How?
No.
Can't hit on me.
Yeah.
I'm a venture capitalist now, but I'm still somebody that identifies, right? Not only that, but it's like, no, I still identify as a kid from East Oakland. Like I'm literally the person you would want to put in this position of power, because I will make sure everybody eats and gets their proper opportunity. And more importantly, most people don't even know who to give the opportunities to, right? Especially not a regular venture capitalist. And my angle is, like I told you before, I stay in my lane. I'm not trying to find the next Uber or Google or none of that. I'm trying to find the next person of color that has a dope idea that may be affecting the culture, and I want to help them do it because I know what it means or how important it is either to a culture or a particular subset of people that I identify with. That's it.
So right? sort of like the Players Tribune, but for tech, you know, telling those
stories.
Yeah.
Hey, that's it. And the people that aren't going to get the opportunities. That's women. That's people of color. Just things that I wholeheartedly identify with because I understand the lens and what lens should be invested in my opinion, versus ones that shouldn't, or based on what I've seen on other ventures. And to be honest with you, I have a lot of fucking smart friends. Let's just be real.
But like you said, it's not just about entertainment and helping, but it's about educating too. So both those things, that intersection is important.
It's very important because they can go hand in hand. Exactly. We've always been forced to choose, but I'm like, hey, why can't I watch a dope, entertaining documentary and not get educated in some form or fashion? And it doesn't have to be a corny or, message, yeah. You know what I mean? Integrated, you know, or however creatively you want to do it. But the point is, there is an intersection. We just haven't been using it, in my opinion, the way that it could to not only
it's not all
magnify. Yeah, I want to magnify what I know, but also bring other people to it. Like, it's all good. Or maybe this may be a way of understanding from somebody else on the outside, like, damn, why do they like sneakers? Or like, yeah, because we were fucking broke and couldn't fucking afford them. Like, there's a thing, and it was associated with this in our neighborhoods, and associated with, like, you know, it's like, you know, you just, you also want to educate the outsiders too, to know why people are waiting in line, why there are plenty of men, black, white, gold, you know, whatever, that love the sneaker culture and the hunt of it. And like,
yeah,
it's like one of those things, is like, unless you're in it, you're not going to understand. So I just try to be the best bridge, but still
be true. Yeah.
Yeah. Honor the truthfulness.
It's interesting though, because whether it's white America that follows in line with what you're talking about, stuff like that. But if they can have that educational piece along with it and understand, and then the relatability, like we talked about earlier, it's very interesting to me. We're so excited to finally be supporting Moolah Kicks. They're dropping in May of 2021. They are the first female-only brand basketball shoe, and you can find them online at Moolah. Moolah is M-O-O-L-A-H, Kicks, like shoes, K-I-C-K-S, plural, MoolahKicks.com. That's the end of part one of the interview with Ray Young. We hope you enjoyed it, and we hope you listen to part two of the incredible interview with Ray Young right here in the Sports Deli. Remember, your voice matters when fighting systemic racism. Read a book, acknowledge your white privilege, watch a movie about institutional racism, call your local or state representatives, and or have a conversation with someone that doesn't look like you. We have to change the economic, educational, police, housing, prison, and voting suppression narratives that currently need to be changed in this country. And the only way to do that is to listen and learn, and then help be a part of the mobilization and change that we want to see. Remember, you can always send us an email to thesportsdeli@gmail.com. Yeah. Until next time, please mask up still. Remember, Black Lives Matter. Peace.